Welcome to the Stone Cold Stros. I'm Brandon Strange with Charlie Polillo and Josh Jordan. You can follow them on X at Polillo and at Josh Jordan SCS. On today's episode, count us fashionably late to the party, but my oh my, it's still a party. And as we get into the episode, we're going to dig into the implications of Dana Brown's posting deadline steal of the offseason. Brown says he feels good about the rotation. We'll put our fantasy GM hats on and organize the pieces on the board. Charlie, Josh, welcome in. Boy, what a difference a week makes in the tone and tenor of an offseason. Our last episode, we were pontificating, are the significant moves done? But the Astros front office said not so fast and land one of the most coveted Japanese pitchers and do so for a price that many other teams could have done. Astros' most significant acquisition up until New Year's Day was the Mike Burrows trade. Now the splash of the offseason in H-Town is unquestionably Tatsuya Imai. We caveat it that he has yet to face MLB hitters, but if he can bring some of that filthy swing and miss stuff to Houston, how legit is this pitching staff and specifically the starting rotation poised to be?
Well, I'm going to call my Imai and raise with this is an Imizing signing for the Astros. This was letting the market come to them. And of course, it's all speculative with what he will do. But his market crashed, certainly relative to everybody and his brother's projections. All your Jim Bowdens, they all had him 150 million plus, 6, 7, 8 years. The Astros undertake risk with this deal, but it's minimized. They have him on 1 year, 18 million. Really, it's 1 year, 21 million, because if he doesn't throw 100 innings, it's either an epic fail or he's healthy at the end of the year and a postseason hero for the Astros. The risk is, if he's really good, well, he's going to opt out and then you have to pay the going rate or you lose him after just 1 year. If he stinks or blows his arm out, he opts in and you're on the hook for Jose Abreu for 2 more years. But his pedigree is excellent. Now, Scott Boras does Scott Boras stuff. He's the greatest agent of all time in terms of contracts earned and commissions taken. But saying that, well, basically, Imai has done everything that Yoshinobu Yamamoto has done is absurd. The Dodgers megastar, who was way better in Japan than Imai was. But that's just Boras hyperbole. And the market called his bluff on this. So Yamamoto got $325 million from the Dodgers. The Astros get Imai for $63 million max over 3 years. So in how Jim Crane wants to operate the budget, in not jumping out into the marketplace, this fell beautifully for him. I think he's phenomenally worth the risk. A couple times going back to the deal that sent out Anderson Brito, you know, that he's physically a comp to Pedro Martinez, very unlikely to ever be anything close to Pedro Martinez. Well, Imai is a physical comp fairly close to young Pedro Martinez, as well as Yamamoto. There are some questions about him, but look, he turns 28 years old early in the season. He's been a stud 4 years running with an earned run average below 3 and with the peripheral numbers that, yeah, you collapse down NPB stats to how they'll translate to Major League Baseball. But if you're an Astros fan, I don't see how you can anything be but be stoked for this and be thankful. The new naming rights partner was the Japanese AC company and not something from Liechtenstein or Luxembourg.
Yeah, and I think the success they had with Kikuchi had a lot to do with this. Scott Boras, he's the agent for him too. So when they weren't getting those long-term deals they were hoping for, they turned to the Astros, and the Astros were willing to give him that high AAV on a short-term deal. Very Jim Crane-like. He doesn't like the long-term deals. And I'm excited for it. The swing and miss is great. He's what the Astros look for, way more strikeouts than he has innings pitched. They're going to start with a six-inning rotation or six-man rotation, it looks like, anyway. So even though they pitch every fifth day instead of every fourth day in Japan, I don't think that's going to be a big transition if the Astros are going with the six-man rotation, at least early on. So I think it's pretty low risk, high reward. That the only concern is, and the concern, if it's a concern, is because he pitched well and he's going to take off. We had Chandler Ohm on the A-team this week, and he said pretty much the only way he's with the Astros next year is if the performance isn't great or if he deals with some kind of injury or he shows he's just not durable to maybe he's more of a relief pitcher. Unless any of those things happen, I think the Astros are in a good spot. You got to replace Fromber somehow. And, you know, you worry about next year. And to answer your question, Brandon, I think it's a pretty darn good rotation. When we talked about this last week, we said it's concerning because you're expecting Hunter Brown to be a top three Cy Young type pitcher again, which we expect he'll be great. But those are some pretty lofty expectations to do that again after the league has another year to kind of catch up with you after you've had a ton of success. So I think this move makes a whole lot of sense. I like the Burrows addition as well. You put these guys in the rotation, and I think your rotation's Brown, Emi, Javier, Burrows, Arrighetti, and maybe Ryan Weiss. And you have some other guys too, of course, that we could talk about. But I think my guess is that's how the Astros would like it to shake out if they had their choice. And of course, McCullers is the wild card we always talk about. You can't expect a lot there, but at least they have a lot more depth. They have guys that can pitch length out of the bullpen if you still add AJ Blueball to the mix. And who knows what's going to happen with Jason Alexander and all these other guys, but at least they have a whole lot of options here going into the season.
I think you hit the six pack, Josh. Those are the six guys they'll hope are in their rotation, barring injury or something else calamitous during the spring. Emi profiles as a number two, number three starter. He's not as good as Yamamoto as he comes here. But the Astros don't need him to be their ace. They have Hunter Brown for that role. Any pitcher is liable to break down at any time, but Emi has been durable. It's the once per week regimen of Japan. He talked about needing to adapt to that. Hey, the Astros rarely had Hunter Brown go on anything less than 5 days rest, fewer than 5 days rest last season, only a handful of starts on 4 days rest. So if it's once per week, that's 26 starts for the season. The last 2 years, Emi has averaged nearly seven innings per start. So if you knock an inning per off that, six innings, there aren't many starters. The Astros had Brown, Fromber, that's it, who averaged six innings per start. Emi closer to 6 2/3 over the last couple of years. And again, just 28 years old. He turns early in the season. He should be in his peak years. Apparently, one of the undercurrents of concern around Major League Baseball is that his fastball will be a little too flat, and Major League hitters will take cracks at depositing those in the Crawford box on line drives. But his hits per inning ratio, strong. Josh mentioned a strikeout ratio of well above one per inning. He was wild early in his career. Well, he was a baby. He was in the Japanese Major Leagues at 20, 21 years old. So 4 years running now, he's had excellent control to go with the strikeout numbers. There is no such thing as a sure thing, including guys with great major league track records who get 6 years, $200 million contracts and break down or have fall off in performance. The risk versus reward opportunity for the Astros in 2026 is just, it's just fabulous on this one.
Josh, you mentioned how the shorter deals are more Crane's preference on these contracts, but we've talked about how deferred money is becoming more and more common on some of these bigger deals, but also shorter with opt-outs is becoming a big part of today's free agent landscape. So in your estimation, Charlie, does this deal signal an evolution in Jim Crane's philosophy going forward? And how do you think that philosophy can help the Astros maybe push out or maybe even avoid altogether that rebuild reckoning that we've been talking about?
I think philosophical shift will be impacted by what are the rules under the next CBA. You know, a whole bunch of teams are going to be saying we need to knock off the Dodgers being able to defer $1 billion worth of contracts. They still take hits year to year, right? Otani's $46 million per year toward the CBT, but that's not $70 million. So what will be the rules? I think the bigger component of this is the Astros have finally entered the game in the Far East. You mentioned Kikuchi, an in-season acquisition. Nori Aoki was a temp here in 2017 to get a World Series ring after getting traded during the season. And before that, Kazuo Matsui, who all Astros fans would like to forget ever happened. But the Japanese league, it produces misses. It produces hits, kind of like the minor leagues, kind of like Latin America. To not have been in there to this point was an Astros shortcoming, right? They've been fabulous in tapping Cuba and the Dominican. I mean, who knows what happens with the Venezuelan pipeline these days, but the Astros have done well there. But they did not, as Jim Crane put it in the press conference, really have any boots on the ground. Now they do in Japan and in Korea. Who knows if someday the Chinese market becomes a factor in Major League Baseball. But Japan damn sure is, Korea secondarily so. And so the Astros will now have a full-time scouting operation. And I don't know if Daikin said because of marketing opportunities will kick in a little more than what they were already paying, but that all Daikin reps were first row in the press conference and Jim Crane, the first thing he did was acknowledge their presence, that they cut a deal with a Japanese company, pays the first real dividend for the Astros.
Yeah, we wanted them to do these opt-out deals for a while, but Jim Crane didn't seem to want to do it. Remember, even with Bregman, with a lot of these guys, it just... I think maybe he's just come around and realized they needed it this time. They had to go grab some pitching, and it was a great opportunity because the Astros did pay more than it's showing against the CBT, because you have to pay a posting fee to get him off his team. You got to pay them that money. But that money is not included in the balance tax, so you can kind of skirt that a little bit. So I thought that was a good opportunity for the Astros to pay a little more, but it didn't mean they had to go over the tax threshold. So they're still in a good spot to where they have enough cash to go grab a backup catcher. They said that that's on their priority list. So I think it's a good move. And some people say maybe Boris kind of invented these short-term opt-out deals. It seems to me like LeBron was doing this before Scott Boris was doing it, just in the NBA, where LeBron was like, no, just give me all the money for a couple of years and give me opt-outs whenever I want. So this has been going on for a while in sports. It's a good way to control where you want to be. So I think the hope is, and Dana Brown mentioned it in this press conference, he's hoping that he likes being here in Houston. He likes the development from the pitching, and that he does see that they're making him better, to where he might want to stick around, even especially if the money's comparable. If somebody's going to give him a crazy 7-year deal, we know Jim Crane's not going to do that. But if the money's close, maybe he wants to stick here because he likes the environment. He said he wanted to be basically the only Japanese player on a team. He didn't want to go join the Dodgers. He wanted to go beat the Dodgers. So I like him for that already.
Look, deferred money's been around in baseball for 30 years. Every year, there's Bobby Bonilla Day, because the Mets cut him a check for over $1 million for 30 years. Because way back when Bobby Bonilla signed for something like 5 years, $30 million, the Mets said, well, let's defer this. We'll pay you 7% interest over 30 years, because the Mets were raking it in because Bernie Madoff was the Wilpon family's financial guru. And you wonder why the New York Mets haven't won anything since 1986. So indeed, not new at all in baseball. It's just specifically the Ohtani contract, because $680 of $700 million was deferred, brought the shock and awe factor, and the Dodgers with the resources do it more and more contracts. But when you do these short opt-outs, you're paying more up front, right? Bregman was nowhere close to worth $40 million per season. Well, even with the deferrals, it was 31.5. So that's what the Red Sox paid him towards the CBT for the 1 year. I don't think Jim Crane had any interest in paying Bregman $30 million, much less $40 million, deferrals, no deferrals. So I don't think he wants to have the players and the agents, and I wouldn't either, that they're undertaking zero of the risk. Mm-hmm. And as we talked about with Imai, if he's a failure, right, the Red Sox gave a guy named Daisuke Matsusaka 6 years, $103 million. He had one good season, and the Red Sox had to eat all that money. Well, if there were an opt-out and he was really good, he's either going to try to hold you up for a lot more money and more years, or you lose the guy. I think Jim Crane is fine with the risk of losing Imai, and they just cross their fingers that he's not a bust or a big injury, because he then just says, okay, I'll take $18 to $21 million more of Astros money for the next year or two. But the Astros are a big boy franchise. They sit at the big boy table, and sometimes you have to take calculated big boy risks.
First, Charlie, careful using Venezuelan pipeline and boots on the ground. We're not trying to get flagged by YouTube. But, you know, Crane talked about adding scouts in Seoul, Tokyo, and Taiwan. So that really does seem like it could be a big deal going forward for the organization. It will be interesting to see how the rest of this offseason unfolds, because we're already seeing some speculation from some outlets that perhaps without the major push from some big teams, from the bigger teams driving up the bidding, we may see Tucker sign a Bregman-esque short-term deal if he can't find that long-term deal he's looking for. And, you know, when we're talking about these short-term deals with the opt-outs and comparing the leagues, I think the obvious difference is that in the NBA, superstars matter so much. Whereas MLB, you got to fill out an entire roster. And the Astros, even without their best hitter, were just a game away from making the playoffs themselves. So one of the interesting things that came out of the Monday presser was Jim Crane telling the media that there weren't extensions in place for Dana Brown or Joe Espada. What did you guys think of that?
Certainly not surprising. I have no issue with it. I've always felt the concept of a lame duck manager. Oh, he's the substitute teacher. All the players will be firing spitballs and blowing off homework. I'm not worried about that. It's the third year for Espada as the manager, the fourth year as the GM for Dana Brown. If the Astros miss the playoffs for the second year in a row and it's not because of an avalanche of injuries, it's basically a window at which you see changes in Major League Baseball and other professional sports. I think for years and years since the advent of free agency, how many fans have said, you know, these guys, they get big dollar, long-term guaranteed contracts and lose their motivation, don't play so hard. And if they stink, they can still get all their money. They should all get one-year contracts and work for your supper, earn your next year's keep. Well, that's wrong because you have collective bargaining. And in what industry do top-tier employees only get one-year deals, whether we're talking movie directors and actors with film options, authors with multi-book deals, heads of Fortune 500 companies with long-term contracts or oodles and oodles of stock options. So it's an antiquated idea. The players were indentured servants when limited to 1 year and without free agency. But that Espada and Brown either get to free agency and have all the leverage or some leverage by, hey, we're back to the ALCS or the World Series. The price of poker is going up, Jim Crane, if you want to keep us, because we may have other suitors. The other side of the coin is if they fail to produce and Jim Crane wants to change, hey, golden rule. He has the gold. He can make the rules and he need not be on the hook. I mean, I would not extend Espada or Brown at this moment in time. I'd wait and see what happens in 2026.
Yeah, with the new bargaining agreement possibly happening, it makes sense not to commit to anything long term. And I mean, let's be real, Espada and Dana Brown, it's not like they have resumes where other teams across baseball are like, oh, we're going to way overpay for you than what the Astros are going to give you because your resume is so great. I mean, these guys are pretty new to their jobs and the team didn't make the playoffs last year. So I think it's good for both sides. You see, if these guys can raise the team back to another playoff hunt, if they do, great. And then you worry about that after the collective bargaining agreement is worked out. And for Espada and Brown, hey, you have a job. You have a chance to go prove yourself again. And if you're going to prove yourself, if you're Espada, you're like, I'd rather do it with these guys. He trusts these guys. He thinks they can win ball games. So I think it's a good fit, and it makes sense for both parties. If Dana Brown was some GM that had led the Astros, you know, he had like a Jeff Luno resume or something, and he was coming up on the end of his deal, it'd be a different story. But both him, Brown and Espada, it's kind of prove it deals.
Crane wouldn't extend James Click after World to more Series. Than a one-year deal, yeah. A one-year offer. Then they won the World Series.
Yeah.
So why would he preemptively be saying, yes, let's renew vows and extend the marriage between he and Dana Brown and Joe Espada? Right. Dusty Baker, who's an old guy, of course, but was on one-year contracts his last 2 years.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. And in addition to the James Click comparison, think about how long they waited to name Espada the manager once Dusty left. They went through a process. So it wasn't like he was just some foregone conclusion as the manager. So yeah, I don't think Jim Crane fears change at all. I think he believes in the quality of the machine. And I believe he thinks there are multiple people capable of driving it. Final thoughts before we're out the door.
Tatsuya Imai chose number 45 among the numbers available. Shout out Ryan Stanek. But of more import, Gerrit Cole wore number 45 with the Astros. And Imai cited Gerrit Cole and the Phillies' Zach Wheeler as two kind of big league baseball pitching role models of his. Wheeler wears 45 with the Phillies. Gerrit Cole was here for a brief, glorious couple of season fling. If Imai can be 75 cents on the dollar wearing number 45 that Gerrit Cole was here, Good shot the Astros are back in the playoffs in 2026.
Yeah, and back to the GM, head coach, manager thing. If you're another ball club, I think most of them think the magic with the Astros is the in-house stuff, not Joe Espada, not Dana Brown, whatever magic the Astros have. They think it's inside the building, and it was here before they got here, or at least doing stuff above Espada's pay grade while he was here. So Jim Crane, I'm with you, Brandon. I don't think he fears that if he loses those guys that the Astros don't have the secret sauce anymore. That's just not the case.
And you guys touched on Boris throughout this. I kind of wanted to save it for the end because I had some thoughts on it. As much of a villain as he is to baseball fans, Boris now reps 7 of the Astros players: Altuve, Brown, Correa, Imai, McCullers, Pena, and Jesus Sanchez. And you can say what you want to about him, and people have said plenty, but this deal likely doesn't happen without Boris, because he was impressed with how they handled Kikuchi and was apparently impressed with the dossier that Dana Brown presented him at the Winter GM meetings, expressing their interest in Imai. Look, we talk about the Astros pitching car wash on here all the time, and it's clearly not just us that notice. I pulled this quote from a Japanese outlet that Kikuchi spoke with about his time in Houston. So I'm trusting the translation here, but he said, "On the first day of transferring to the Astros, I had a meeting with the manager, coaches, and data staff. And there they told me to change the distribution of pitch types and the location to throw. The Astros presented the data in a way that made it easy for me to take in." So regardless of what social media has to say about the Astros' reputation, and as much as we've pontificated over the brain drain in the organization, the Astros' saving grace at this point continues to be their near Midas touch with pitching.
Sounds like Verlander's comments about the Astros staff and how he complained to the Mets that they were behind. And so it's not just Kikuchi. A lot of players come through here and feel the exact same way.
Well said. If you're watching on YouTube, click like on the video. If you listen on podcasts on Apple or Spotify, give us a 5-star rating. Remember, if you're a Texans fan, be sure to subscribe to our other podcast, Texans on Tap, because we'll be covering the playoff game live after the game Monday night. For Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon saying so long. Thanks for listening. Happy New Year. Go Astros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.